What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Raising Kings, a podcast dedicated to single mothers who are raising black males. I'm your host, Brandon R. Scarborough, founder of Dreams Academy. And today, I am proud to have my friend, Miss Cherie Bell, on the podcast with us. What's going on?
Nothing much. Thank you for having me.
It's early.
It is very early. I am still trying to wake up.
Yeah, this is a first early morning shoot ever. And yeah, I guess we're going to wake up through it. So you are, I invited you on because you hold a number of different, your mom, your teacher, mm-hmm. educator, all of that kind of stuff. So I want to dive into what it's like raising a young man and then teaching young men, and what your experience has been. And we just going to kind of talk to the moms, and just dive into your story. Now you are a co-parenting. Mm-hmm. So if you're co-parenting, are you a single mother?
If we are co-parenting, okay, so I am co-parenting. I see myself as a single woman raising a young black man.
So you just dove into a whole nother episode that we haven't recorded yet, but that's great. I can't wait to talk about that.
I know that's going to ruffle some feathers.
So, okay. So does... So... the singlehood, why does singlehood and motherhood, why are they even tied together?
So, singlehood and motherhood. Well, for one of the things that I will say, I used to consider myself as a single mom. I think sometimes, you know, just the fact that I've been divorced, I see myself single, haven't been in a relationship for a while. I'm not tied to anyone. But at the same time, I'm a mother. But there is a difference between single mother versus single woman. My son's father is very much still present. He still provides financially, emotionally. We co-parent quite well. He is primarily in Atlanta. However, he comes back 10 days a month to Ohio. And so, you know, again, he's still present. He's still there, even when he's not there physically. He's just a phone call away. Mm-hmm. And so with us having that great co-parenting relationship, still working together as a team, we are still raising our son together. And so I don't see myself as a single mother because he's very much still present 100% of the time. And so I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, there is truly a difference with that.
Yeah, because I don't ever hear nobody say I'm a married mother.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that usually bothers me, it's always around Father's Day when I see moms posting those that are single, you know, happy Father's Day to me. And that bothers me. You know, I can see in some situations that the father's, you know, not present or, you know, has passed away or whatever. But again, that child still has a father, whether, you know, you have other male figures that mm-hmm. are present, uncles, older cousins, grandparents, you know, people of that nature. That is something that those are the people that stand in the gap for my personal situation when my son's father heads back to Atlanta. You know, so if I need somebody right then and there and I can't reach him, I'm calling cousins, older cousins. I'm calling my father, my brother. These are men that are still present. They can still, you know, represent a father. Mm-hmm. To a point.
Shout out to Adonis, my college roommate, her brother. So that's great to hear you have a village, but I kind of want to feel like ruffling feathers here now.
Oh, you love to ruffle feathers.
I do. I love to ruffle feathers. So I'm trying to figure out then, or define maybe even, single mother. Singleness has to do with your dating or whatever box you fall in,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
So that has, let's separate that from mother. Mm-hmm. You're single, dating, married, widow, whatever, right?
Right.
But why is single attached to mother or does it have to do more with maybe the absence of the father?
See, I think to me, single has more to do with you are
not married.
In a sense, you're not married. One, you're not tied to anyone.
What that got to do with you being a mom?
Well, I see.
You was tied to somebody long enough to.
I was. At a point. I was, but I think it has more to do with when it comes to single parent, that one who is the sole provider for that child. If that makes sense. You are the one that's providing financially.
Parent, right. So I feel like when I hear single parent, that sounds different than when I hear single mother.
Yes. That is correct, which is why I see myself. Well, I see myself as a single woman. I refuse to say that I am a single parent because my son's father is very much still present. He still provides.
But you're single though.
I am single. Yes.
I'm just playing with the words.
I know.
I'm just playing
with the words right now. It's so difficult to.
I know. I'm having so much fun.
I hate it so much.
but this is where we are in our, I guess, in our culture or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'll ask this question. Do single mothers often wear that title as a badge of honor?
Ooh, do single mothers wear that title as a badge of honor? I think it depends on their personal situations. Mm-hmm. I know I hear a lot of people say that's not anything to be proud of because now your home is broken because you're no longer either, well, married or you're no longer dating a particular person. And so I do think that some women, depending on how much weight they pull, mm-hmm. they see it as a badge of honor. I'm providing this for my child. I'm doing that. I'm making sure that my child gets to and from different places, making sure that I'm still providing any and everything that they might want or might need. If a woman feels like she is handling all aspects of that child's life, then yes, she may wear it as a badge of honor because she's holding it down. Versus, you know, someone who, everybody has a different situation.
Yeah.
You know, so I can see other moms that may be struggling financially, emotionally. I personally, I know when I got a divorce, that was a huge struggle for me financially, emotionally, mentally. And so for me, that was not a badge of honor. For me, I was actually embarrassed. And that caused me to become depressed because when you get married, you don't get married to, you know, get a divorce. 14, you know, so yeah. I saw it as failure for me. I don't like to fail. I don't like to disappoint, things of that nature. So I think it just depends on everybody's personal situation, you know, how you handle things, how you view yourself.
Right. So now falling into this category that's been created of single mothers, how do you navigate, even with help, how do you navigate? See, that's weird. So that's weird for me at this point because you single mother, but awesome village / community.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, you're not raising him alone.
No, I'm not. Although I have my son the majority of the time. You know, and his father comes back 10 days out of each month. It's such a convenient situation even still because his dad bought a house here, mm-hmm. you know. So we really tried to make things, even though it's not a normal situation, we tried our best to make the best of our situation.
Why is it not normal, though?
It's not normal because I don't believe that most people who are divorced and you have one person that lives in a different state, I don't think it's normal for that person to up and say, okay, hey, here's a stipulation of you moving back. I have to have a house there. To me, that's not normal. I think most divorced couples that are raising kids together decide, okay, usually it's the mom that gets the primary custody mm-hmm. and the father that doesn't, depending on situations. But the majority of the time, that's what it is. And I think that most people in their situations will say, okay, the kids will go with the dad during the summertime.
Yeah.
The kids will stay with mom during the school year. I think we have a unique situation where it just happens to work out. He works from home and was financially able to make that happen. So I made it my mission to say, okay, before I find a house, let's find you a house. Found him a house within 2 weeks, three doors down from my mom and dad. That's where we felt like God was working.
So that's
why
I'm challenging.
Everything was falling into place.
That's why I'm challenging the word normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sounds, I wouldn't call it abnormal. That sounds like very
everyone,
super dope. Like,
it is.
You know, to one, to even have the resources to do that.
Right. And I don't think everybody has the resources to do that, which is why I said I don't think it's a normal situation for us. You know, because most people have to make that decision. Like, what are we going to do with the kids?
So let's talk about not your abnormal situation. Mm-hmm. Why is co-parenting such a difficult thing to either make normal or even put the best interest of the child first? And it's
not
a lot
talking about
of
my situation, right?
So no, because yours is not normal.
It's not. But the way we started out was rough.
Okay.
Like the way my ex-husband and I started, once we got a divorce, it was extremely difficult. And so I will say one of the things, and this is just not just our situation, but even just in general, not getting therapy would be one. If you're not healing from what broke you, you are going to consistently be bitter, vindictive.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that because that was me, you know.
So there's a level of emotional intelligence that
absolutely
needs to be.
You have to be emotionally intelligent, mature to look at the bigger picture and see what matters most. It's the kids. And so
you're expecting two people to be emotionally intelligent.
Ooh, you talk about being petty and, you know, playing the tit for tat game. Mm-hmm. That was us. And it took us 3 years to get out of that phase. So I would say,
if one person starts dating someone.
Let's talk about that. It's difficult to see, even though you got a divorce for a reason, feelings are still there to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have history with that person, and then to see them move on with someone else, especially if it was someone that they were involved with while you were still in a relationship or marriage.
This ain't the podcast.
We're not going to get into that. But I'm just giving you an
example. You even gave that.
So we won't get into that.
Wow.
But no, but seriously, that can be.
Wait, so
that's people. Hey, that's real life.
Especially if they move on with what?
The person that they were also involved with.
I just had you say it again for dramatic
effect.
During your
relationship or marriage.
So
we moved past that.
I was about to say, but it's dope that if he sees this, he's okay with you saying that.
He absolutely would be okay with it. Especially because that person and I actually became friends.
I feel like this is about to be tonight's conversation.
Healing and growth is everything. This is why I wanted the things as a mom, and that he and I are actually looking into now, getting therapy for our kids. Our son has been in therapy before once we got a divorce. So taking it back to dating other people, now he moved on with that person. I moved on with someone else. Now, it's a lot for kids to see you with someone else. I think it's different with mom than it is with dad. Well, I'll put it like this. I think it's harder for sons to see their moms with another man versus daughters to see their father with another woman. And so our situation was so... It became so out of pocket. I remember my son was five at the time I was dating another man, and he would do whatever he could do to get my attention and take it away from this man. Now, me being single, even though I was dating, I felt that it was important that this man that I was dating understood my kids come first. We're not married. So whatever is going on with my kids, you take a back seat. You know, so I had to make sure that they, you know, we were on the same page about that. That still was a struggle for my son. It became so bad to where I remember one day I got a call from my son's school saying that he had a stomach ache. And I said, oh, well, you know, he can wrap up the day. The next day, or later that night, excuse me, later that night, he woke up about 2 or 3 in the morning, and this guy was staying with us at the time. And he's like, my stomach. And it was so bad. I thought I was going to have to take him to ER, you know, so I got up and sat with him. He was fine after that. The next day I take him to the doctor. We're on our way to the doctor. And I said, you know, how are you feeling? He's like, oh, I'm great. I'm hanging out with you for the day. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Your stomach is supposed to hurt. I took a day off, which is already difficult. You know, being single, you want to, you got to worry about your coins, you know, your finances. And it ended up coming out, oh, Mom, I was really okay. I just wanted to spend time with you. And I was like, oh, that's a rough one, because that's when I really began to see, oh, he doesn't like him.
So that's what I was about to ask.
Yeah,
did he really want to spend time with you, or did he want to get you away from him?
It was
him?
A combination. He wanted to spend time with me because he felt, this man is taking up my mom's time. You know, I see my mom around him. She's smiling. She's happy. She's not spending time with me. I don't like that. Therefore, I don't like him. Now, fast forward a couple of days later, I remember my son coming from his room. And he's calling me. He's like, Mom, I can't see. I can't see. And I'm thinking, this boy is playing games again. What is wrong with him? I said, well, Harper, open your eyes. And he's literally walking down the hall, holding the wall, holding onto the wall, like he literally cannot see. And so something told me he's playing again. He's pretending to be blind. I told him, I said, now I knew at this time he didn't like to get shots. I said, well, Harper, I said, we're getting ready to take you to the hospital. I said, they're going to have to stick a needle in your eye to insert some fluids so you can see again. He was like, I'm okay. I said, oh, my God.
I was trying not to laugh, man. I started thinking about Ray.
Oh, but I said, that's when I knew. I said, oh, I need a therapist immediately because he's having a hard time adjusting not only to divorce, but now, dating. Mom has brought another man into the picture.
That's not his dad. So
that is not his dad. And while at the same time, although I'm telling this man, hey, listen, I got to focus on my son, you're going to have to go. It became a competition for this other man to where he said, oh, well, I guess Harper won. I said, oh, that's what this is? And so ultimately, I had to break things off with him.
This is not where I intended for the show to go today.
This is not going to work.
Something else.
You know, so.
So, wow. So now we're talking about a lot of ego.
Absolutely. A lot of ego was involved in that.
On both sides, actually.
On both sides, which it's a little scary. Because
then you think about the intelligence of a 5-year-old that to was, be like,
yes,
let me formulate a plan.
That was scary for me.
To get this Negro out of here.
I told his dad, I called his dad immediately, and I said, listen, A, B, and C just went down over the last few days. He said, and so when are we finding a therapist? I said, immediately, you know, because for a 5-year-old to think, how can I get this man out of the picture?
Yeah.
Formulate plans that are so
strategic.
Strategic. The level of intelligence that you have to have as a 5-year-old was scary. That's when I also knew. I said, oh, he needs to be in different classes. Since you might need to be in advanced or gifted classes. And then it became, he's not here. He was quite pleased. But one of the things as a parent that was always important to me that I didn't always get when I was growing up was allowing kids to voice respectfully their thoughts, their concerns. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a conversation. I said, well, why did you go to this extreme to behave this way? And I will never forget it. He said, Mom, I miss you and Dad, and I don't want you to marry him. He's like, I was scared that he was going to come in, marry you, and then take up all of your time, and you would not spend any time with me or my sister.
So
that hurt me. That was difficult to hear a 5-year-old talk about.
Yeah. And I think that's dope that you gave him the opportunity to voice that. Do you think that? Could there have been? Do you think that it didn't matter who it was? Like, was it the guy itself, or do you think that this would have been the rule for anybody?
I think
because let me ask this real quick. How long past the divorce was it past that? Like, was it kind of quick?
Let me see. I got a divorce so our divorce was finalized 2015. Paperwork was, I think, filed maybe January 2016. So by this time, it had been maybe 5 months.
Wait a minute.
It was May of 2016 that this guy and I started dating, talking, before it became official.
How long was husband gone?
Ooh, so here's another unique thing. During the process of our divorce, I think most people, when they separate, one person's out of the house, the other stays. We were still living together.
Got you.
And so technically separated, but still in the same home. So if you want to be technical, we were done probably for about a year before our divorce was finalized. But kids don't understand that.
You know
what I mean? So I think for our son, it was like, oh man, it all happened so quickly.
So son has dad around, and then at some point, here's this other person that's taking up your time. And I'm asking this very intentionally for like our listeners and women to hear what the effect of another man coming into the picture and how that can be traumatic for the son. Was he trying to forge a relationship with him? Like, and not, because I think there has to be an understanding, like, hey, I'm not your dad, nor am I trying to replace your dad, but I may be present. Like, I'm around for a minute.
I believe he pushed a little too hard. I think he tried too hard to forge a relationship with our son. He wanted to be liked, wanted to be accepted because he really liked me. But sometimes people don't understand. You got to let things flow naturally, especially with kids. And so because of that and how everything turned out, I said, moving forward, I'm going to be really cautious about not only who, you know, I introduce to our kids, but also when. Because I think
that's a whole conversation.
You move too quickly with someone, with introducing your kids to someone, things tend to turn a little sour.
So you know, your situation, dad is around. Mm-hmm. I think it's even more detrimental when dad is not around, and you have a son that may be dealing with the anger surrounding dad not being around, but then you bring a guy around, or man, I just think that's a delicate situation where, you know, you have mothers who want companionship,
right?
Who have sons, kids in general, even,
right?
And they have to tread light with the scheduling of when do I bring this person into my house, introduce to my kids, especially when, you know, for all the purposes of this podcast, you're talking about young men at any age, because even at five, if dad is not around, he absolutely recognizes dad is not around.
Right.
But then you bring in Junebug, and Junebug's around, but he might not be. You know, like you said, dude was, you know, kind of pushing too hard, which makes it ingenuine.
Right. Absolutely. And it's funny because we, even today, my son just mentioned him yesterday. I remember when he used to do this and it just really bothered me. Now here, our son is getting ready to be 15.
So that's 10 years ago.
Almost 10 years later, and it's still...
Something was getting on his nerves at five.
This effect on our son.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes, you know, we want companionship so badly and sometimes a little too quickly that we tend to, you know, disregard the emotional piece for...
I don't know if I would say disregard. I don't think people are even aware enough to think of that.
Like, right. I think sometimes we can be a little selfish because this is like, you know what? I have not dated since 2018. So since I last, that was the last time he and I had a conversation. So I've not been on a date since then. So at this point, I'm kind of like, ooh, man, you know?
Yeah. I think that's so powerful in that, one, you definitely don't see or hear that story often.
Right.
And if you watch things play out on like social media, you see a lot of attacking and
absolutely
bitterness and
right.
you know, different things that parents may not realize. Even if the kid doesn't see bitter post, they feel that
they
energy.
Sense it.
They
absolutely.
Sense it from
yeah,
from the,
for sure.
You know, from both sides, if they're around both sides.
Right.
And so that's extremely dope.
Well, not only that, but I've also seen on social media where just with my age group, some of the folks that I've, you know, that I'm very familiar with, you know a little bit about their situations, but even their children are on social media. And I'm thinking, your kids can see these posts.
Oh, yeah,
they,
yeah.
You know, and so to me, that is so, it's disturbing. It's disheartening because it's like, man, you have this opportunity for a teachable moment, you know, to show your children how you should still conduct yourselves, you know, despite, you know, their, you know, mom and dad not being together. They don't have to witness all of that. Why take that to social media? Why allow your kids to be subjected to that? You know, so it's just interesting how things tend to play out and the things that we don't consider despite having kids. And it's like, this is what they're growing up to see. Those are actions and behaviors they may carry out in their own relationships because this is all I know.
Yep.
And so our son's father, we're doing all that we can to change the narrative that, you know, exes can't get along, and if they're still in communication, oh, they must be messing with each other. No, absolutely not. That bridge is burned. But we saw the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. What matters is, you know, how our kids turn out to be. We want them to see healthy relationships.
And that should be the, you know, you would hope that be the end goal for all situations.
Right.
But we also know, you know, there can be those situations where one person wants that and the other person is not aware enough or not right. mature enough to help get to that goal. So what do you say to a single mom who's dealing with that really wants healthy partnership, healthy raising, and especially, you know, again, we talking about our black boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this in dreams. You know, one thing I say, in 9 years of us mentoring young men, I've literally only met, and I'm talking about over 1,000 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I've only met less than 20 dads.
Oof, man.
And now this is the thing. We get kids too that come from two-parent homes
mm-hmm.
where in that case, dad is saying, hey, you just make and do something that not failing, but you can help me accentuate this message, right? Mm-hmm. So we get that too. But 90% of our boys come from a home where the father is absent.
Right.
And I might have said this in the last podcast, but, you know, I've gotten calls before from dads like, why is my son in your program? I'm like, hey, man, you got to handle that.
He's trying to take over.
Yeah, like, I don't have nothing to do with that.
Right.
You know, I didn't sign your son up. I don't know you. So you got to take that conversation elsewhere.
Right.
But I also had the conversation with him. I said, hey, man, why don't you come with him? Why don't you show up? Why don't mm-hmm. you come see what
instead
we're doing?
Instead of being defensive.
Instead of being defensive.
And be part of
and be
the
part
solution.
Of it. Yeah, and that did not, that's never happened. But yeah, I've met very, very few fathers. And so one of the things we get to see is, and I remember one time, I forget who came to talk to the guys, but it was like a mental health, emotional health session. And he just asked, he was like, has your father ever hugged you?
Mm.
And we had a number of young men say, never.
Ooh, boy, that's sad.
And it was like, wow, like you've never hugged your dad.
Man.
And
that's sad.
There were a few who have relationship with their dad. Mm-hmm. Like they weren't absent. And they was like, man, we don't hug. Matter of fact, a couple of them was like, that's gay.
Ooh, wow.
And so that turned into a whole teachable moment. Like, man, like,
I've heard that in the classroom.
Yeah, yeah. So now going to the, you know, kind of the educator aspect of mm-hmm. what you get to see, you know, being a teacher of, you know, middle school, right?
Right.
And getting firsthand, you know, experiences with angry young men. Who literally have a right to be angry.
They do.
They didn't ask to be here. They didn't ask to be subjected to their situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's something, you know, speak to like that to mothers who are trying to figure out what to do with their young men who have these feelings of anger and bitterness towards, you know, maybe their fathers?
Man, it's so disheartening to see every single day. So I teach sixth graders, but see, you know, a variety of students every single day in the Cleveland area. And just as you said, all of them are angry. Literally, the majority of them are angry. And a lot of their living situations, some of them actually have both parents in the home. But the interesting about that is you have parents that are a little rough around the edges. You know, we have the parents where the males are, it's not okay to cry.
Mm-hmm.
suck it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you be a man, you know, so they're having, men are having those conversations with their sons. And so it makes it really difficult for them to manage their emotions.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I see the angry boys where they're just flat out acting out. They take it out on you. Mm-hmm. Because this is what I'm being taught. I have seen the, you know, of course, we got the single mothers, you know, who they can't do it all. They're yeah. overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, and because the father is not present, even though he may be alive, you have boys who are, they will buck up on mom. Yeah. I'm starting to get bigger than you. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do, because not only is it the son in the home, they're usually the oldest ones. And now I got to watch all of these siblings.
Yeah.
You know, because mom has to work or hold down two, maybe even sometimes three jobs.
Yeah.
Mom might not be home when I get home from school. She might be at work. And so now I've got to cook. I have to clean. And so in my eyes, I might be 12, 13, 14. I'm a grown man.
I'm the man of the house.
And so someone like me, you're not coming in my classroom talking to me like you pay a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have those conversations. And it also takes the teacher to understand this is their situation at home.
That's their reality.
And
yeah.
so if you don't take the time to get to know the kids and understand this is why I behave the way that I do, it's very difficult to develop or forge a relationship with that student. You know, so it takes a lot to understand, okay, when I get home, I'm the adult.
Mm.
And so we have to have those conversations like, hey, listen, I get it. You at home, you hold it down while mom's at work. That's different. You are the adult in the home at that time. However, when you come to Ms. Bell's classroom, these are the behaviors
you're 12.
That I expect of yeah. you, because this is how old you are. So this is normal 12-year-old behavior.
Mm-hmm.
What's at home? Not normal, but you can't help that situation.
Yeah.
You know, so it takes someone who to show them that you care, you understand, and modeling for them, showing them what you expect from them and what you want to see. A lot of the boys, we battle, a lot of our boys fall victim to the streets. There's quite a few kids, boys at the school, young black men, they're part of the Kia crew where they steal cars. I'm mm-hmm. talking 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
That's wild.
Stealing cars. I remember a situation last year, and it just absolutely broke my heart. One of my 6th graders, his brother was a 7th grader, shot and killed. 2 a.m. He had stolen a car, and I don't know whether it was whoever he stole it from, but he was being chased. And as he was driving the car as a 7th grader, this is a 13-year-old boy, shot and killed. They shot him in his head. They found him flipped over in a ravine, a 7th grader.
Wow.
This is what we are up against. Yeah. How can we get our boys to understand this is not the life? And so, you know, being a teacher is very difficult to see that, and there be so many that it's so overwhelming, you don't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
Because this is their lifestyle. This is what they've been doing.
Yeah.
For years, you know, so that's what I tend to see. And then, of course, all of that affects academics.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
reading is last on their list at this point.
Reading is the last thing
yeah.
on their mind. We have to reach our kids where they are, figuring out their interests and things of that nature, you know, to try to reel them back in.
Is it even possible?
I think it just depends. I truly think it depends on their mindset. There are some boys that want to be something.
Yeah.
They don't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
They're not getting the guidance at home. And if you have teachers who are working with our young black men that don't care enough to even try to get to know them, reach them where they are, who else is going to do it?
Yeah.
you know, so they tend to fall through the cracks. And a lot of teachers tend to focus on those that are already doing what they're supposed to because they don't want to lose them.
Right.
So if we've lost the other ones, so be it. Let's try to keep these. I'm usually that teacher that where teachers are like, hey, can such and such sit in your class because they are just acting a fool. I just have a different type of relationship with kids, you know, so I try to reach them where they are to reel them back in. Let's talk, like, what's going on, you know, not making it so official, like, oh, this is the teacher. Like, no, at this point, I'm auntie, you know, I'll play mom at school. Like, what's up? What's going on?
And that's such a burden on, like,
educators.
You have
so many different roles.
Yeah, yeah. You the teacher, the counselor, the mom, the auntie. You know, I hear about teachers, you know, doing hair and stuff at school. You know, forging those relationships with kids, which is beneficial for sure. But now we're taking away from academics, but we can't even get to the academics because we're dealing with ABC.
Right.
And so yeah, that's tough. You know, we see it at Dreams with our young men, you know, just even there. You know, this came up the other week, just even hypersexualized and overstimulated with the young women and all that kind of stuff.
Oh man, don't take me there.
Yeah.
We're at that point. My son is definitely at that point. He's almost 15. So it now is a matter of phone check. Yeah, let me see that phone. We've had a couple of instances where I think I about blacked out and I called his dad. I said, oh, I need you to make a trip back a little sooner than later, sooner rather than later. We got to talk, you know. So, you know, just helping our son to understand this is appropriate, this is not appropriate.
Yeah.
We understand, you know, you're going to like girls, you want to talk to girls, but there are some lines that we do not cross until we are a certain age. And so
that's great that he has that, but he has that foundation to say, hey, you can't do that.
Absolutely.
Whereas
some do not. Nobody's home.
And there's no indictment on mom. She really wants to.
Mm-hmm.
She tired. She working 1, 2, 3 jobs. She trying to keep the lights on. It might be multiple kids in the house. She doesn't have the capacity to monitor every moment.
Right.
And so it's tough out here.
It is.
Yeah.
And I will say that's a struggle that I've also experienced, even though, you know, I've moved back. His dad is still present, comes back 10 days each month. I still have a community of people who can help. But there are still times where I'm like, man.
Yeah.
When I'm by myself in the house and I'm dealing with A, B, and C, man, I'm tired. It's a lot. It's tough.
Yeah.
Which is why I would encourage therapy, single moms. Like, I, you know, going back to what you asked, what would I say to single moms? Like, seek therapy before you even consider companionship. Your kids, you got to make sure your kids are squared away and good to go before you even consider companionship or bringing somebody else around. Because there's so much, you know, like you said, 10 years later, and my son still has, you know, negative memories about that last person. So, you know, everything that you do has a lasting impact. And so you want to make sure that you are doing what you can on your end to make sure that you're healthy enough to even show them what healthy relationships look like, whether it's friendships, romantic relationships and things of that nature.
Yeah, because you want to be able to model
healthy
relationships across the board.
Right.
Gabe, we're going to call this episode Dating, Divorce, Companionship in the Classroom. It's long, but we covered all that. Hey,
I wear so many hats.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll shout out to you and, you know, advocating and endorsing positive, you know, emotional and mental health, not only from a parental lens, but for the kids as well. So that's a dope message for the parents.
Yeah.
Tell the people, you know, where they can find you at. If you want to be found, you know, teachers, they be trying to hide on social media and stuff.
I do try to hide. Yeah. So you
they be
can't
lurking,
find
they be lurking
me.
And trolling. Yeah.
I can't remember my, well, I know my Facebook name is Reed Denise.
Whatever, you know.
And my Instagram name also is Reed Denise, but there's an underscore in there somewhere. Yeah. But that's where people can find me.
Yeah, don't worry about it. We just, this is enough. You know what I'm saying? Listen, moms, shout out to you. Keep going, you know, keep doing what you're doing. It's a hopeful situation, mm-hmm. and we all working together to try and make it happen and make sure our young men understand healthy relationships, healthy patterns, healthy boundaries, healthy everything. And so, you know, I hope that this podcast helps you, gives you a feeling of hope, gives you a feeling of, you know, you're not alone and all that kind of stuff. If you need another resource, grab my book called Talking Points, mm-hmm. talkingpoints.com. Is where you can find it at. It's a resource for single mothers that are raising black boys that I wrote a few years ago. I think Ms. Bell will tell you that it was helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So grab that talkingpointsbook.com. I'm Brandon R. Scarborough. Dreams Academy, Mr. Dreams Academy on everything. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all that. One thing we want to start doing is ending each episode with a question. So inbox me. DM, whatever, you know, if you have something that you want us to talk about, please shoot it over to me so we can get it in the conversations, so that we can help make you a part of the conversation as well. So till next time, Brandon R. Scarborough, peace.